Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is March 23rd, 2014, and this is episode 48, OMG GDC.
OMG!
Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
As you may or may not have surmised by our episode title, this week we're going to be taking a look at the GDC 2014 event.
You know, if they had a barbecue there, it would be the OMG GDC BBQ.
Oh my gosh, I wish they had. In any event, before we get to what should be a fairly light discussion this week, we have a pretty full slate of our usual follow-ups and news bits. So in the interest of your time and our own, let's get this party started. Slaggy McWaggy, if you'd like to start us off.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't want to take this news because One Piece Unlimited World Red is confirmed to be coming to the West. Namco Bandai has announced that we will be getting the 3DS and PS3 games at retail, and for Wii U and Vita, it will be a digital release.
Well, and something else that's kind of a big deal, and you know, we've talked about this game a lot. For those of you out there playing the home game, you may recall we've been talking about, like, a Monster Hunter-style One Piece game for, like, the last year. This is that game. And further from that, in Japan, this is only a 3DS game. So, you know, the PS3, Wii U, and Vita versions are exclusive to sort of this international release it's getting both in the US and the EU.
What platform do you plan to pick it up on?
I will probably grab it on 3DS and maybe double dip on Wii U.
Hey!
Indeed.
Well, now you can be Roronoa Zoro
and
Luffy D. Monkey. And the guy with the guitar who's a skeleton or something?
Brooks?
With an afro?
Yeah, his name is Brooks.
Okay.
He's the ship's bard.
Oh, okay. Castlevania Lords of Shadow Mirror Fate HD is coming to Steam at some point, probably within the next week, because it's going to be at the end of March. Unfortunately, the Silicon Era post does not really give any more information besides that.
Well, I mean, you know, this HD port is already available on PS3 and Xbox 360, and the PC already has Lords of Shadow 1 and 2, so this is just sort of the outlier in the series at this point.
Yeah.
In any event, we also have news that Shovel Knight has been delayed by a few weeks.
No!
It is worth mentioning, you know, they had previously announced, Yacht Club Games, that is, had previously announced a March 31st release date, and they're still saying it's going to release in April. So we shouldn't be waiting more than a couple of weeks. You know, this sucks, but, you know, if they need just a little bit more time for polish, by all means, take it. You know, a delayed game is only delayed until it's out. A shitty game is shitty forever.
Yeah, we're almost there.
We have news here that Yu Suzuki is researching Kickstarter with the thought that maybe someday he'd be looking to kickstart Shenmue 3.
Oh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's sort of the whole story, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, we had talked about how he was going to be doing a postmortem on the series at GDC. And that,
which he did, and we'll talk about a little later.
And that's where this news came from.
Actually, this news came from an interview the day after his panel at GDC.
Oops.
You know, because he had discussed during the postmortem, and, you know, I guess we're sort of getting ahead of ourselves, but oh well, we'll just dig in here. He stated during his panel that he would be interested in doing Shenmue 3 with the right business opportunity. And so at interview the next day, I guess a reporter had asked him, you know, if Kickstarter was one of the avenues he was looking at, and he confirmed that he has been doing research on how that might work.
Oh, excellent. We have news that Azure Striker Gunvolt is coming to North America this summer, and is also being considered for release in Europe.
Woohoo!
But the good news is that those of us in North America, we will also be getting this Inti Creates gem with collaboration from Concept.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this last week when this game was announced. It was pretty clear from the announcement trailer. It had ESRB rating pending notices, so it was pretty clear it was going to get a release here. I'm just really happy to see so quickly that it was confirmed that, you know, not only are we going to get it, but we're going to get it this summer. It's not going to be like some crazy long Monster Hunter style, Monster Hunter styled several year wait.
Monster Hunty. That'd be a great drag race challenge.
Next on the docket, we have news that Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call is going to have songs from the Saga series.
That's exciting to me, not necessarily because of the Saga news, which, I mean, is exciting, but I hope that this opens up, like, Bravely Default songs in Theater Rhythm.
Well, that is exactly what I was thinking, that and, like, Kingdom Hearts songs. Certainly, you know, Seiken and Setsu songs. All of these series that have tangential connections to Final Fantasy, much like Saga does, like, absolutely, give me some DLC. Give me a DLC Seiken and Setsu pack. I'll buy it. Give me a DLC Kingdom Hearts pack. I'll buy it. Give me a DLC Bravely Default pack. I'll buy it. Like, Square Enix, I am telling you, do this and I will give you all the money you require. Like, I will buy these things.
Yes.
In an interesting and rather unexpected reveal, Capcom has finally announced the fifth new character to Ultra Street Fighter IV. This character is Dekapra.
Interesting.
She is an assassin for M. Dyson's Shadowloo organization. Who is a well-known character in the Street Fighter comics. This will be her first time being playable in a game. Her character design looks kind of like Cammy meets Vega.
Yeah, I'm kind of here for it.
And she's apparently going to play as a Charge-style character, not unlike Guile or Charlie or something. So yeah, that's pretty interesting.
That is interesting. Also interesting is that the X-Bone will be coming to 26 more markets this September. The list of markets is Argentina, Belgium, Chile, Colombia, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Finland, Greece, Hungary, India, Israel, Japan, Korea, the Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, Slovakia, South Africa, Sweden, Switzerland, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates.
You know, I was waiting for you to bust out into an Animaniacs-style sing-song.
No, I had an ex who did that once at a party, and it killed the mood, so I don't do Animaniacs sing-alongs anymore.
Well, I have another list here for you to read off, because Microsoft also announced a list of 25 indie games coming to the Xbox One platform as a part of the ID at Xbox publishing program.
All right, we have 1001 Spikes, Caliber 10 Racing Series, Castle Storm, Chariot, Chuck's Challenge 3D, Contrast, Dive Kick Edition Plus.
Right?
Forced, FRU, or FRU, I guess. Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition.
Which we talked about last week.
Gunscape, Habitat, Hyperlight Drifter, It Draws a Red Box, Nutjitsu, hey, Pinball Arcade, Cube Director's Cut, Riptide GP2, Roundabout, 60-Second Shooter Prime, Spectra 8-Bit Racing, Strike Suit Zero, Super Time Force, The Last Tinker, and Wolverblade. Like, some of these, like, we've kind of talked about, like, No Goblin was, and I think Roundabout we had already even talked about when they announced it, not just No Goblin. Another one that's obviously familiar is Contrast, which was on PS4 and Guacamelee. And Forced is actually originally was a Kickstarter game that I had backed, so that's cool that it's coming to the bone. And, of course, 1001 Spike, so lots of good indie games coming to the bone. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, the Wii U has a lot of good indie games coming, but so that's the bone.
Yep. The bone, the PS4, and the Wii U all are very indie-friendly this go-around. It's very exciting to see indies on sort of all of the consoles right now.
Indeed.
So at GDC, not as a part of a panel, but during one of the many interviews conducted, Ken Levine revealed that, you know, sort of his next foray into the gaming space is going to be heavily narrative-based. Games Industry ran this really, really awesome piece that, frankly, would have been one of our smashes this week if I didn't have two smashes that were already super important to me. But anyway, if you're interested in sort of the direction of narrative structure, that Ken Levine is sort of pursuing for his next venture, I would highly recommend you check out this piece. We'll link it to you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And it sounds like pretty exciting stuff, sort of like remixable NPCs, sort of story beats that are interchangeable so that you don't really know what kind of story you're going to get on any given playthrough. It sounds like he has some really good ideas, even though obviously we're still sort of tingly in the bad way, at what happened to Irrational Games.
I don't know, I see this picture of Daddy Levine, and I'm kind of like tingly in the good way.
You thirsty bitch!
He's kind of a studly daddy.
In news that surprises no one who has been playing along at home, Stig Asmussen has left Sony Computer Entertainment Santa Monica Studios, following the round of layoffs that occurred a few weeks back.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of been sad news for Santa Monica ever since we talked about the whole All-Stars Battle Royale drama and stuff.
Yeah, when they took over for Superbit Entertainment, who was itself more or less shuttered as a result of sort of Sony fuckery.
Titanfall on 360 has unfortunately been delayed a few weeks. It'll be now available on April 8th here in the U.S., or if you're in Europe, April 11th. So, you know, it's been a couple of weeks pushed back, but it's still coming, and, you know, now if you're not on Xbone and you want to play Titanfall, you'll have your chance very soon, so I'm sure that EA appreciates your patience.
The Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 first set of DLC has been announced, and it features the return of Alucard as a playable character.
Holla!
He's going to have new and different abilities from Dracula in the main campaign of the game, and he's also going to have puzzles that involve time manipulation.
That's awesome!
Sidekick, I bet you're real excited about this one.
Oh yeah, because we've received word that Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate is getting even more new characters. And there's not only just going to be new characters, you know, Marie Rose is coming next week, but also we've received word that there is going to be a new characters DLC set. And so it'll be interesting to see what dudes and babes are parachuting onto DOA Island.
And, you know, it's interesting because they've said that it's basically going to be 6 months or so until we see this bundle available for the home versions, because these new characters are going to debut in the arcade version first. So that means, you know, by the time these characters come out, Tecmo will have been supporting Dead or Alive 5 for, like, years. So I really want to just sort of give them a hand. You know, in the fighting game world, outside of Capcom, and even including Capcom, you don't really see a lot of these games getting long-term support like, really, I think they should be. You know, and Capcom does support Street Fighter IV fairly well, but any of their other fighting projects sort of get the shaft. And, you know, especially look at, like, what Arc System Works does, and I love them dearly, but let's not pretend that Blaze Blue's release structure is anything but some fucking romper room fuckery.
Yeah.
So kudos to you, Tecmo. I'm totally going to support you and buy all this DLC. All that ass.
Monster Hunter Frontier G is going to be receiving some costumes and weapons themed on the anime Attack on Titan.
Yeah, that's really exciting. You know, Phantasy Star Online 2 is also getting some crossover DLC for Attack on Titan. I think we've discussed that here on the show already. But I'm really, really excited to see that Monster Hunter Frontier G is also getting this stuff. It kind of makes me want to get into Monster Hunter Frontier G.
Yeah, I figured you'd be excited about that.
Slaggy, this is a follow-up to a news story from about a year ago that I seem to recall you being really interested in.
Yeah, we talked about during our Shit Games episode that a documentary was going to try and excavate the E.T. Atari 2600 game graveyard down in New Mexico. That excavation request has been denied.
Wow, I was not expecting that.
Now, the thing is that there were levels of concern involving soil issues and also chemical levels. So it wasn't just, like, bureaucratic BS or anything. There were also other legitimate concerns.
Yeah, you know, that's funny because when I first heard this, that this was being denied, I was really upset. I assumed that it was just, you know, again, red tape. But it's interesting to see that there's, like, an actual ecological concern here.
Yeah, I like the way that joystick theme. I like the way that Joystick stated it in their article. They said, imagine cracking open the soil of a landfill to hunt down a video game graveyard, only to have noxious fumes and chemicals poison you, like you'd open up a pharaoh's tomb and suffered the mummy's curse.
The mummy!
In some really upsetting news to me personally, the Kickstarter game Super Action Squad, previously Super Retro Squad, which we absolutely threw our full support into here on GameBuoy.org, has officially been placed on hold by developer Exploding Rabbit, has confirmed via their corporate head, Jay Pavlina, that the $53,509 raised on Kickstarter for the game, which again was renamed Super Action Squad, about a year ago, has been put on hold. They said that the Kickstarter was a bad idea in the first place, and he basically wrote a really embarrassing blog post, throwing all kinds of shade, airing all kinds of dirty laundry in a very public fashion, naming names of specific people on his team that he was disappointed in the performance of. It's just very classless, very ugly behavior, and they have basically confirmed that people who want refunds can, of course, request them, but they will probably not be fulfilling refunds.
Yeah, that just goes to show when you've got a Kickstarter, you got to be on your game, you got to bring it, just like it's RuPaul's Drag Race or something. You know, and I can't help but think that if this Kickstarter had still been going on, that they would have probably lost backers from this.
Yeah, again, it's very disgraceful, it's very dirty, like, not a great way to conduct your business. They have stated, over at Exploding Rabbit, that they are hoping to still pull together and get the game done down the line after they have a few more games under their belt, but that this project was simply too ambitious for a first project. And, it's hard to argue that, but for me, the real stingy, gross part is really this awful behavior on their part of naming names and outing people as bad workers that they didn't work well with, but at the same time, while describing the work conditions in this studio, it sounds pretty abysmal. I don't know who could have gotten work done in that situation. So it's just real ugly. It's sort of a major letdown to me to hear that it's going on hold in the first place. This is just a very sad and depressing story to be reporting here.
Yeah, that's a big bummer. But in positive news, originally Project Spark was meant to have something called Spark Time, and it was basically you could only play user-made levels that you built with paid content that you hadn't purchased for 40 minutes each day. And then you'd have to use in-game credits or real-world cash to buy Spark Time. Well, they got rid of that, and, this is still in beta, and they've introduced something called Spark Premium, which basically will just give you an experience and credits boost, which allows you to unlock new content easier. I think that's definitely a better way to implement money,
microtransactions.
It means really like a subscription-based model, kind of.
It's also worth mentioning that the Xbox One beta for Project Spark is now in open beta.
Oh, that's great.
So you can hop right in, yeah.
Yeah, I should go download that when I get home.
You should. I just downloaded it this morning. And, with our follow-ups having been closed down, I think it's time for
News. Oh, my God. News.
Oh, my God. News.
So Persona Q, Shadow of the Labyrinth, is getting a special limited edition 3DX XL, or LL as it's known in Japan. I say LL because Cool J. I say LL because this has only been announced for Japan. It is a Velvet Room sort of motif. It's got like a blue diamond pattern with a Le Grimoire du Coeur. It's like a book.
It's meant to look like the Persona Compendium from the games.
Yeah, so it's really neat. This goes on sale in Japan on June 5th for 25,380 yen. It includes a copy of the game and the soundtrack CD.
Exciting! We also have news here that the Crazy Taxi series is getting a new installment. But before you let yourself get too excited, it's a mobile game that is free to play. Sega has announced this. And one thing that's exciting is that it is being developed by the creator of the original series, Kenji Kano, in collaboration with a Western studio. So this is in development for iOS and Android devices, and is planned for release later this year.
Well, that's exciting.
You know what else is exciting?
What's exciting?
Nintendo is going to be updating their player-versus-player free-to-play game, Steel Divers Subwars, based on player feedback. I can't think of any other instance where Nintendo has really been this proactive on, like, doing balance updates and, like, really looking at what the community is into and sort of updating based on that. This is starting to sound like a weird new venture for Nintendo, really, breaking the mold from what they're sort of known for typically.
Interesting.
You know what else is exciting?
Oh, the fact that Ragnarok Odyssey Ace is going to have the Tales DOA 5 and other crossover DLC in the West.
Absolutely. Ragnarok Odyssey Ace, when it came out in Japan, had a ton of crossover downloadable content from other properties, such as Tales of Symphonia, Soul Sacrifice, Gravity Rush, Dead or Alive 5, and Akiba's Trip 2. Also, content from Grandia, which is a classic JRPG series. You know, a lot of times these kinds of crossovers don't come to the U.S. The easiest example right off the top of my head would be that in Japan, Monster Hunter 3 had a ton of Jump manga crossover, like, weapons and stuff. Like, oh, you totally get some One Piece-inspired swords. And that stuff was totally removed for the U.S. release of the game. New weapons were made to replace it, but they're just super generic. In this case, Ragnarok Odyssey Ace, aside from a pack of Grandia music and voices, all of the other crossover content will be coming to the U.S. as free DLC.
That's great news. Something that looks super cute and fun is that there's a game called Princess Punch from Gung Ho, and it's kind of described as Angry Bird with RPG elements.
RGP!
And you have to help Princess Punch kick soldiers at her enemies. You'll be able to get Attack on Titan, guest heroes and titans. And I assume, so this is only in the Japanese version right now. We do have an English version of Princess Punch available, but
I'm downloading it right now.
That's awesome. Awesome! We have no news if this Attack on Titan collaboration is going to be coming west.
Which is funny, paired to that discussion point we just had. You know, again, we don't get a lot of these cool anime crossovers here in North America, so I have my fingers crossed for this one. I know that Gung Ho has done some things like doing some of the Eva Puzzle and Dragons crossovers here, so, you know, maybe they're sort of working out licensing for anime crossovers in mobile games.
Cool. Corpse Party Blood Drive is going to be coming to Vita. It's about 70% done. One of the things that is apparently notable is that the first time the exploration parts of the game will be in 3D.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be coming out on July 24th with a regular edition costing 6,800 yen and a limited edition costing 8,800 yen.
Oh, exciting. Also exciting is this DSiWare app from Circle Entertainment that lets you add movie effects to your videos shot with your DSi or 3DS.
That's really cool.
And looking at some of the effects here on this article over on Silicon Era, like, there's a really cool Matrix filter that, like, renders things in real time as if it's, like, in Matrix code from the movie The Matrix. Like, I think it's actually really neat looking.
Yeah, and you'll be able to save, like, 10-second clips as AVI files to your SD card. Perfect for the Vine generation.
Oh, right. Slaggy McWaggy, I know you like this series. Why don't you do this one?
Assassin's Creed Unity has been confirmed. It is one of two new Assassin's Creed titles coming up. And this game is reportedly set in Paris. It's apparently coming this holiday. And it's going to be a current-gen game, not a last-gen game. So hopefully this means that the engine's a little bit more polished.
And, you know, news on this leaked a few days before it was originally announced, and the leak indicated that there was going to be a second Assassin's Creed game released this year for last-gen consoles, Wii U, PS3, and 360.
I had heard that the Wii U was not confirmed, though.
Well, it was included in the rumor. I mean, none of it's been confirmed. What hasn't been, we do know is that the current game Unity will not be included for Wii U. And that's, I mean, unfortunately.
Yeah, because it's kind of a last-gen console.
Womp, womp. Okay. Yeah, no, that's the meme, and unfortunately, you know, if people aren't, making games for it, then it is what it is.
Yeah. We've received news that, Jamie Grissamer, who is lead designer at Sucker Punch Productions, well, I should say was, because he left days before the recent release of Infamous Second Son. He confirmed it on Twitter based on the news that had been on
his LinkedIn profile. And he confirms, you know, he's really excited for people to get their hands on the new game, but he has left Sucker Punch. However, he's not really talking about it yet.
And I mean, he was at Bungie before that, so, you know, he's bounced around. I mean, I guess not really bounced around. He was at Bungie for 12 years, so.
We also have news that Hakuoki, Memories of the Shinsengumi, is slated for a release in North America on May 6th. It's going to have both a standard release and a limited edition. The limited edition version will come with a copy of the game, as well as a traditional Japanese Omamori love charm, a Hakuoki-inspired Japanese hair comb, a Hakuoki-inspired Japanese hair pin, and a Japanese-inspired premium box.
Interesting. A new version of the classic arcade game Gauntlet is slated to be coming to PC this summer via Steam, and will have additional Steam OS support. It seems to be, you know, at its core, so pretty much the same Gauntlet, but with a complete visual overhaul. You'll be able to choose between a warrior, Valkyrie, wizard, and elf, and delve in the dungeons full of monsters and traps.
The most interesting thing to me is that this remake is being developed by Arrowhead Game Studios, whom you might be familiar with, from other series, Magicka and Helldivers. Magicka, in particular, was a very Gauntlet-influenced game in the first place, so that sounds to me like a good fit, and this is going to be sort of the start of the WB Games Vault, which is apparently an initiative that WB is kicking off to take some of the old Midway arcade classics over to Steam.
Yeah, and they point out that Midway owns franchises such as Spy Hunter, Joust, Defender, Tapper, Paperboy, Rampage, and Robotron.
Oh.
I would kill for a new Paperboy.
Ew. You and Paperboy.
Do-do-do-do-do.
You are literally the only person that likes Paperboy.
I love Paperboy. I did not like Paperboy 64, but I like Paperboy and Paperboy 2 quite a bit.
You are literally the only person ever.
No, that's not true.
If any of our listeners like Paperboy, feel free to tweet at us, hashtag GameBuoyExtra, and let us know why.
The next Kunio-kun game is going to be set in a fantasy RPG setting. And, you know, of course, Kunio-kun is a series that we consider in the West as things like River City Ransom, Super Dodgeball Brawlers, and Renegade. This is going to be Kunio-kun Hot-Blooded Magic Story.
Oh, my God, I need it right
now. It is going to be an eShop release this spring, and hopefully we will see it come west. It looks like it is being co-created by Arc System Works.
Well, they've been involved with the series for a few years now.
Have they? Okay.
In fact, if you look at a lot of the more recent releases that have made it over to the West, you'll see that their names are mentioned in, like, credits and what have you.
Oh, well, wonderful.
We also have news that Konami is getting into the mobile puzzle battle game business with their entry, Chain of Souls. This is an iOS game that blends elements of the puzzle and card battle genres. I don't have a whole lot more than that to say other than it's free to play and available now for iOS via iTunes.
Man, you know, it just seems like there is an overflow of mobile social puzzle-based games on the market right now. It would be a very interesting point of discussion if we do a puzzle games episode.
You really want
to? I really want to do a puzzle games episode.
Well, why don't you take this next news entry?
The creator of XCOM, who is Julian Gollop, has launched a Kickstarter for Chaos Reborn. It is a reboot of one of his earliest games, which is Chaos, the Battle of Wizards from 1985. That was a competitive board-like strategy game that allowed 2 to 8 players to partake in a magical battle with up to 8 different wizards. So I think it would be cool if it got funded. I'd probably play it.
I know that we have several people listening to that listen to our show that must be familiar with the original Chaos game. I highly implore you to check out the Kickstarter video for this. I know it's funny that we're pitching a Kickstarter after just, you know, complaining a little bit ago about a Kickstarter that failed, but in this case, we're dealing with industry veterans. They have, you know, a goal stated of $180,000, which sounds like a lot, but if you think about it, that to me indicates that he's done his homework and knows how much money he needs to make this game.
Yeah.
And moving forward, that's for me something that's going to be really sort of important to check out, is do these people understand how expensive making games is? It sounds like Julian Gollop does, and I personally have already backed this, and I hope it gets funded because it sounds great.
One of the cool things about the original Chaos was that spells had alignments that affected the law or chaos of the environment, so it's kind of almost... In some ways, it makes you think of a D&D sort of thing, but I mean, not exactly, but, you know, so it'll be really cool if this gets funded.
Indeed.
Doctor Who, the adventure game, is a Steam title that
adventure
is now available.
Adventure Games.
The Adventure Games is something that is now available on Steam. They are episodic games that follow the 11th Doctor through 5 stories, including City of the Daleks, Blood of the Cybermen, and Shadows of the Vashta Narada.
Now, you know, I've actually played these games already. I got them via somewhat dubious means, because they were initially released as free games in the UK. So while I sort of have some qualms with them now costing, you know, $20 here in North America, I will say that if you're a Doctor Who fan, they're worth the experience. They're fun.
Oh, that's good, because I know some of the Who games have been a little bit shoddy in terms of quality.
You know, I was looking at them when I was playing them through the scope of, oh, this is free, so I can't really complain
that's
about
true.
The problems. So maybe we should wait to see how reviews look on these.
Yeah, I mean...
My perspective was a little skewed by the free aspect.
It's got the 11th Doctor and Amy Pond, so, I mean, that's always a good thing. Of course, the joystick article started with Allons-y. But then they acknowledged that they made a reference to 10th Doctor. Hashtag nerdy. Crytek has released their free-to-play strategy game, The Collectibles, on iOS. It's a kind of a play on words of The Expendables and also the fact that it's a collectible card game. You have to assemble a squad of military dudes and dudettes. I mean, I hope dudettes. I don't know, personally. And you have to battle your enemies using a traditional turn-based interface. But you can help your combat by using collectible card upgrades. And it's actually running on the famous CryEngine.
I had assumed, given, you know, Crytek and all.
And it's only available on iOS at the moment, but will be soon coming to Android for those who prefer a different sort of mobile architecture.
Exciting! Let's see, we have news here that the surprisingly awesome 2011 shooter Bulletstorm is no longer available on Steam.
Gasp!
You might remember Bulletstorm as being the rather irreverent first-person shooter written by the well-renowned comic book writer Rick Remender, who did work on Uncanny X-Force, Uncanny Avengers, and of course his creator-owned Fear Agent. This game was also notable from a gameplay perspective, for being a, like, trick and score heavy, like, point attack game, rather than like a traditional dude bro sci-fi shooter. Obviously it is still very sci-fi, and it takes the dude bro-ness intentionally up to like 11 in a parody of the genre. Satire!
Yeah.
Yay, that was the word I needed. Slaggy, why don't you move us on? I can't talk today.
Well, we've received news. I act like we've received like a personal tip, but we've received news that Ouya is dropping their free to try requirement for developers next month. Currently the whole shtick of the Ouya was that every game must have some sort of free content, whether that's a demo or a free to play model. But they are dropping that requirement due to developer feedback. And we've also received news that exclusive Ouya games can also launch concurrently on PC as well. But, still will have to be...
Exclusive from other consoles?
Yeah, and it has to do with their branching out of Ouya content being on non-Ouya consoles. That Ouya... Not Ouya Plus, but whatever.
Ouya Everywhere or something?
Ouya Everywhere. Eh.
Yeah, this is interesting. As an Ouya supporter, as I am, I talk about that here on the show, I love that there are free versions of every game on the Ouya store. I view it as detrimental that will no longer be the case.
Hence my,
But, obviously, if the Ouya folks are getting developer feedback that they don't want to do free versions anymore, I appreciate that Ouya is listening to these concerns and, making allowances now. Again, even though I personally don't like it.
Obsidian has announced that their next game is going to be an explosive game called Armored Warfare. It's going to be their first free-to-play game featuring modern tank battles. A closed beta is expected sometime in 2014. It's going to be published and distributed by the Russian-based company My.com.
And the team-based PC title will feature player versus player and player versus environment gameplay. That sounds a whole lot like competition for World of Tanks to me.
Yeah. So, Young Horses, who is the developer of Octodad, Deadliest Catch, says don't expect Octodad to be a PS Plus title, but do expect extra silliness.
This is noteworthy to me because I hear every time a indie game is announced for PS4 release, I hear a lot of people in the games community saying, I'll just wait for the inevitable PS Plus free version. So it sounds to me like Young Horses is sort of getting in front of that and saying, that's not going to happen. If you want to play our game, you're going to have to buy our game. And good for them.
Yeah, they tried to focus on, with the updates that they've made to the PC version, they really wanted to focus on silliness. And so they've tried to add more silly tasks, like putting on a sailor uniform and dancing a jig, tying a knot in a rope while a suspicious captain looks on. Are you the suspicious captain?
Aye, aye.
And do you want to take this bombshell?
And last, but certainly not least, and this is by far the biggest news to me personally over the last probably year, up to, the year so far, Koji Igarashi-san has left Konami.
Say what?
Yeah. We've talked a lot about Igarashi-san here on the show, in particularly during our Castlevania retrospective. He's obviously been sort of the guiding hand of the Castlevania series since Symphony of the Night. He's sort of the one that's generally considered responsible for the Metroidvania genre. And, in fact, he did a panel at GDC that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes about Metroidvanias. In any event, he left Konami... earlier this month, his last day at Konami was March 15th, so just a week ago. And he has stated in interviews that the reason he left was basically that Konami is more and more focusing on the mobile and social markets, and that those are just not the kinds of games that he can create. He apparently had several projects that he got fairly far along in development with that were ultimately canceled for not being accessible and social enough. So now he wants to strike out on his own and make the kinds of games that he knows his fans want, which to me says Metroidvania all the way,
uh-huh.
And I am here for it. You know, it's hard not to think that he was probably inspired by Keiji Inafune's success kickstarting Mighty No. 9. So now I just can't help but wonder when we're going to get...
Vampire Hunter No. 9.
Exactly the joke I was going to make, yes. So, fingers crossed, he has not said anything yet about sort of what their plan is for his new company, other than, you know, he's starting to plan now. All right, so let's talk about GDC.
OMG!
Let's talk about GDC. Let's talk about you and me.
Let's talk about all the panels and the interviews that happened there. I tried.
All right. So first up here, let's talk about Sony's big reveal. On March 19th, Sony held a presentation where ultimately they announced Project Morpheus.
Oh, you mean the Morpheus Rift?
That's actually a really rather astute title. It's, you know, Project Morpheus is a VR headset. It's going to be exclusive for PlayStation 4, and it's going to work with the Move, the PlayStation Move.
Oh, good.
So that you have, like, 3D positional interaction with your environment as you're sort of immersed in
the
headset.
Yeah, good on them for making the Move relevant again, if it ever was super relevant.
Yeah, I don't know that it has been relevant so far with the PS4, but it certainly will be now with Project Morpheus. They had several playable demos, and apparently the experience is comparable to what's being offered by the most recent iterations of the Oculus Rift at various trade shows.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. You know, I talked a little bit last week about how I'm definitely a VR enthusiast now.
Well, I mean, you've been a VR enthusiast since the Virtual Boy, honey.
I suppose that's true, but I definitely think that the technology is there now. I think that these experiences are really incredible and immersive and amazing. So I'm really excited about this entry. I do think in the electronics field and games in particular that when competition is introduced to the market, you know, we end up seeing all of the products that are competing improve. So
yeah.
I'm excited what the Oculus Rift guys are going to do now that they have a little competition. They're not the
Sword
only game
Art
on
Online.
The block. Oh, man. I hope so. I'm totally here for a Sword Art Online game.
No, I meant like, oh, wait, spoilers. Never mind.
Ah!
So they had two demos. One was called The Deep, which was an underwater demo. And you had a flare gun in an underwater cage.
And you play it to the beat.
Oh my god, what if it was a rhythm game? You did play The Deep to the beat.
I'm sorry, continue.
And this is over on Silicon Era that they got to have a hands-on with it. They talk about, you know, looking down at your feet and you could see flippers. And just that you were... That the Morpheus helmet tracked head movement, like, pretty smoothly. And then a shark swam around the cage. And, that there were issues with the, shooting mechanics, but that, you know, overall the experience was pretty immersive. There was also another demo called The Castle. And each Move controller had, corresponded to a hand. And, it was basically just a training dummy sort of thing.
But with a like a move in each hand simulating a sword and shield in each hand, you know, you sort of attacked the dummy with real movement as you were immersed in this world, you know, with your visual senses. If you've ever played with this new style of VR, like, that would be a really compelling experience.
Well, I can't help but think that we'll get a Sword Art Online VR game not too long from now.
Oh, man. I need that bad. You know, so that was a really amazing presentation that Sony put on. But you know what other presentation I was really impressed by? Was Square Enix's A Realm Reborn panel.
The flower pot panel.
Yeah. Naoki Yoshida-san started his panel. You know, he talked about, you know, sort of his experiences with the game and how he plays it. And then he basically went on a tear for a good 30 minutes just talking about why the original version of Final Fantasy XIV was a failure. And he really, first off, he gave a lot of, like, sort of, how do you say, like, dirt. Like, he spilled a lot of details that we would never have really known otherwise that really do explain why, both as a program and from a development standpoint, why the original version of Final Fantasy XIV was just a complete wreck and why it didn't work for so many people. Even things like how, you know, they really did make flower pots that had as much code and modeling involved as, like, full-on player characters did.
Yeah, like, you know, you might remember that the original 14, like, fried my graphics card.
Indeed. And, you know, it's, I guess that he chalked it up to a, you know, sort of single-minded focus on graphic quality in the original version, to the detriment of all other aspects of game design and implementation. So I thought it was really interesting, but then he, you know, started talking about how they did the rebuild and relaunch, and they wanted to be the first MMORPG to successfully relaunch. And I have to say, you know, now that we're, what, 6 months out from the launch, more than 6 months even, I have to say I think Overrealm Reborn was a really successful relaunch. I thought it was really successful. So anyway, they have a pretty thorough write-up of this panel over at Silicon Era. You can find a link over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org!
And I would really recommend you check it out. There's a lot of, again, really fascinating insights here on the development process of both the original 14 and A Realm Reborn. I think it's a really compelling read, ton of content, way more than we could go over here on the show, especially since we're trying to turn in a short episode this week. But, again, definitely, if you have an interest in this stuff, check it out. It's a good
Indeed.
Read. Slag McWag, I know that you are a big fan of this game. Why don't you talk about this panel?
Yeah, Aya Kyogoku and Katsuya Iguchi from Nintendo hosted a panel called How to Turn a New Leaf at the Animal Crossing. And it was kind of mostly headed by Aya Kyogoku-san, who is, she had started out on City Folk, which was the Wii iteration of Animal Crossing, and she was one of the first female designers with Nintendo EAD. You know, that's, you know, a pretty big section of their development group. And she kind of just talked about the elements to developing the Animal Crossing franchise and kind of just fully realizing the experience. And she, you know, talks about how it's a communication tool and really just the kind of the social elements and how it ties into the real world and how that keeps people, you know, kind of engaged with the game. And, you know, of course, some of us kind of play Animal Crossing for a while and then it fizzles out. So I'd be really interested to see what's in store next and, you know, ways to have, replay value really kind of, you know, amped up. I don't know what that would take, but, you know, it was definitely, you know, a very interesting look at the development process of New Leaf. And if you are a fan, you should go check this out at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. There was also a panel that was titled Making Weird Games for Weird People. I don't want to talk too much about this panel as it contains spoilers for one of my favorite games of last generation, but the talk was given by Drakengard and Nier creator Taro Yoko, who actually started his panel by sort of concluding his panel. He started with his conclusion and then worked his way into how he got to that conclusion in terms of, you know, again, making strange and off-kilter games. He talked about sort of backwards thinking during script writing and, you know, just sort of how Nier got created this way. Nier, again, is one of my very favorite games from last generation. I've talked about it a lot here on the show. The thematic and plot connections between that and Drakengard 3 are a big part of why we're on Drakengard 3's jock on this show quite a bit. So I don't really want to talk too much about this talk. Just in case you haven't played Nier, there's some huge, like, game-changing twists, and I don't want to spoil them. But this is basically just a really cool, really, really cool talk about, again, sort of structuring those kinds of stories and making that kind of experience. So again, please check it out. There was a great write-up over on Silicon Era. We'll link you at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And with that having been said, Mr. Slaggy, why don't you take this next one?
Yeah, Keiji Inafune-san talked about how the original Mega Man was kind of developed like an indie game, you know. The team on Mega Man 1 was only 6 people. Half of the team were new hires, and all they really had were passion for the game. I mean, we saw that with Mega Man 2 as well, and, you know, I think that's really kind of speaks to why Inafune-san, you know, went and branched out to, you know, form his own company, because, you know, he really had that spirit all along and kind of got lost in the corporate fuckery of Capcom, which, you know, we've been talking a lot lately with Mighty No. 9 about how they really poorly treated the Mega Man franchise. So this is a nice little read. It's not super long or in-depth, but just kind of, you know, talks about how he feels about working with NT Creates, and that now he feels like his heart and soul are a lot more free and healthy. So good for you, dude.
So not exactly a panel, but something that we wanted to sort of call attention to. Nintendo was demonstrating how the Nintendo Web Framework works for visitors at GDC. And in order to sort of show how easy you could do Wii U development using HTML5, JavaScript, and CSS, they created a version of Mario vs. Donkey Kong for Wii U as a tech demo to be like, you know, we made this game in a super short amount of time. It looks this good. And, you know, you could be doing this too with the tools you already have on hand.
Yeah, that's super neat. Hopefully it'll prompt people to, you know, dive in.
And, you know, I want to say that Nintendo has gone on record saying that this is not a planned game, that this isn't, like, an actual game we're going to be able to buy. But I have to say, you know, initially they said that about New Super Mario Bros. Me, which became New Super Mario Bros. U. Oh, LOL.
Ah!
So I wouldn't take Nintendo's refutes to mean too much yet. I think we are going to get this as a game. I just think it's a matter of time. And, you know, maybe we'll see it look a little different. Like, maybe, because these graphics right now, it looks like it's using assets just straight up from the 3DS version, but slightly upscaled. And knowing Nintendo, I feel like they would probably redraw this shit. So, you know, maybe we'll see. I think we'll see this experience come to our actual Wii U's for playing. And I think it's going to be awesome and fun, and I can't wait. Yeah. So, Slaggy, you want to take this next one?
Yeah, this one is really kind of relevant to some of the things we've talked about here on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
You might remember last year that Adam Orth, who was formerly with Microsoft, tweeted about how he didn't understand the always-on drama. The exact tweet was actually, "Sorry, I don't get the drama around having an always-on console. Every device is now always-on. That's the world we live in. Hashtag deal with it." And his panel was called Mob Rules, and it was kind of just focused on the toxicity of the internet as a very real and dangerous, having a very real and dangerous impact on the games industry. He also cited examples like Dong Nguyen and Flappy Bird, and he kind of just shared his story about how basically he was getting 60 hate tweets a minute, which is like one every second, people threatening to hack and destroy his finances, wishing AIDS and cancer on his family, and he had to basically take a break from social media, like lock his shit down, and even leave town. And then he kind of, you know, talked about that, and in the end, he ended up, you know, started 310 games, and, you know, so that, you know, in the end, he kind of, you know, rose above it, but he really just said that, you know, it's kind of just part of a disturbing narrative thread that's emerging in the industry, and that developers don't want to put themselves out there in any form when they take abuse. I mean, this reminds me a lot of the way that some of BioWare's fans have reacted, but I mean, you see it everywhere, really. And I think it's just, kind of shows that we as consumers, you know, need to be responsible consumers. And I mean, I guess that really is a universal sort of thing, but particularly in the games industry, it seems like, you know, I don't think like, oh, my Ford car sucks. I'm going to go and threaten the Ford CEO and destroy his finances. There's some, it's really lots of vitriol in the games community, and I don't know what is so different that, you know, gamers have to act this way.
Well, you know, one of the things I think, and this is actually like a huge talking point that certainly is bigger than we have time for here on the show, but just sort of my thoughts in a nutshell are that, you know, that gamers, and certainly you and I are guilty of this as well, we have certainly rambled and ranted, even here on the show, hopefully not with the level of toxicity that these people have. Certainly not with the level of toxicity that these people have. But we have also gotten rather passionate and negative about some things in the industry. So it's, I guess it's really like a confluence of, first off, a hobby where a lot of us who participate in it take negativity and shit for being into it. I don't know about you, but I work in a fairly professional workplace with a lot of people in, you know, their 50s. And there's definitely an air of like, oh, you haven't grown out of those yet?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really talk about video games. I mean, so, you know, at work, so.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm just like, girl, I am living out loud. Like, all my coworkers, like, I see these people every day. Like, yeah, they're going to hear about my life, period.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm like, but, yeah, no, a nerd, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at how many gamers are probably ostracized, you know, and they're younger, because, you know, certainly we're on the older edge of gamers at this point. But I think the vast majority of this audience are probably like teens and people in the early 20s, who live very chaotic lives because, you know, hormones or what have you. But they're also exceptionally well connected and well understood of how tech works. So when you put like a really sort of chaotic person in touch with someone who made something that made them angry, like,
oh, I can find this guy on Twitter.
Exactly.
I'm going to show my unhappiness by saying, I want to poop on your car.
I'm going through puberty, and I just heard something that really pissed me off about the new Xbox. Who can I attack?
You know, it's really gross, though.
But it is. It's super gross. I certainly don't mean to be excusing any of it. But when you look at the situation, you know, gamers are generally, I think, more tech literate than other groups, which, you know, you brought up the Ford truck. Like, oh, people don't tweet angry at Ford. First off, probably they do. Second off, I mean, if you're a 50-year-old man who plays a banjo and gets a new Ford truck, if, like, your axles go out of alignment super easy or something, you're not just going to angrily tweet at Ford. You're just going to be mad about it and complain about it to your mechanic or whatever. Like, you're not going to go to the guy who designed the car on Twitter and be like, I hope your daughter gets AIDS.
That's kind of my point.
Well, yeah, no, I was connecting it with what you said. Because those people are not as computer literate or savvy as people who are already, for their main form of entertainment, spending 20 hours a week in front of a computer. So, in any event, I thought this was a really fascinating talk as well, so I'm happy that we talked about it a bit. Did you have anything more to say about that talk,
Slack? No, just that, you know, I think that's definitely a bigger topic than we really have time to talk about today.
Exactly so. Then last, but certainly not least, I wanted to talk about Koji Igarashi-san's panel, which was called There and Back Again, Koji Igarashi's Metroidvania Tale.
Hey, girl, what you playing?
But no, this was a panel about Metroidvania and sort of how Koji Igarashi sort of pioneered this genre and sort of what their goals were. You know, a lot of people look at the Metroidvania era Castlevanias, and think like, oh, this is clearly someone taking Castlevania and mixing it with Metroid. But Igarashi-san's goal was actually to combine Metroid and Zelda. He's actually talked about this a lot in his various interviews following his departure from Konami last week. But he did also cover it a little bit here at his panel and sort of talked about what, like, how he wanted to take a side-scroller that was exploration-focused, and add a progression system similar to Zelda. And that was the inspiration for getting new abilities and getting new weapons. And sort of backtracking to old areas, you know, to, with your new abilities to find things. Like in Zelda, you go back like, oh, I see a heart container that's two rafts over, but I can't grab it without the ladder. And then you get the ladder like, oh, I can get that heart now.
Yeah,
Those were the sort of things he was looking at. Not so much the Metroid style, that a lot of people really focus on with, you know, Metroidvania as a descriptor.
Ooh, Zeldavania.
Ooh, Zeldavania. Except, no, we have enough Zelda everywhere. We don't need more Zelda.
Zeldavania was basically Zelda 2.
But also kind of. And, you know, he talked about why they made Circle of the Night the way they did, as far as, you know, having a team that was very experienced with 2D art styles and programming and not 3D. And he basically just talked about the guidelines on how to make a good Metroidvania. Sort of how important it is to focus on making sure that people can get into this genre, and how to sort of design your opening areas to really make people want to play the rest of your game by branching out early and making it clear to players that you'll eventually get to explore more and more as you build up.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a really fascinating talk, especially looking at the fact that he clearly wants to get back to making these kinds of games. I was very interested in hearing what he had to say about them from a design perspective. Polygon ran a summary of this panel, and if you're interested, you can find a link over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And with that, Mr. McWaggy, unless you have anything else, I think that's it for our discussion on GDC this year.
Yeah.
You know, GDC is more of a...
GameBuoy conference.
Well, no, I was going to say it's more of an industry-focused conference. Most of the panels were on, like, pricing particulars of, like, the new Unreal Engine or the new Crytek Engine or this new engine or, oh, the new version of Unity. And these things are awesome, but it's not really the kind of stuff that we talk about here on this show.
That's true.
So if you're a programmer or a game developer and somehow you're not on the DLC... somehow not on the GDC tip, then I would definitely recommend you go check that out. I know they have archives of a lot of these talks. Plus, again, summaries on most of these talks were posted on most of the big gaming sites. So, but those were sort of the standout pieces of news for us, just as gaming enthusiasts. And if there's any panels we missed that you think are very interesting, by all means, please reach out to us and let us know.
Hashtag GameBuoy Extra.
Hashtag GameBuoy Extra.
So... we would like to move on to something that lately we should be calling Smash or Smash, but what the hell, we only have one bumper for it, so...
wait a second. We forgot to talk about the Shenmue panel.
Oops.
So on March 19th, as we had mentioned, Yu Suzuki hosted a post-mortem on the classic 1999 Sega Dreamcast adventure role-playing game Shenmue. And, you know, this panel was really incredible. The translator for Suzuki-san was actually PlayStation 4 architect and game designer Mark Cerny.
Oh, Cerny!
Yeah, who's, man, Cerny's a big deal this year, I swear to God. Anyway, they basically talked for like an hour just about, sort of that Yu Suzuki was trying to build the kind of game he had spent his entire career dreaming about. He wanted to make a game that was like a complete simulation of like a complete artificial world with independent people doing all of, like all the NPCs having their own schedules and lives, mapping out like real weather patterns for the window of time that the game takes place in, and just like a real attention to detail in creating an artificial world that spawned out of initially being just a straight up Virtua Fighter RPG starring Akira Yuki.
Yeah.
And, you know, initially he had, like, drawn up, like, a whole structure for how to make a Virtua Fighter RPG. But ultimately, you know, because it was going to be a Saturn game initially, they moved development over to the Dreamcast, and they turned it into Shenmue Chapter 1 Yokosuka. You know, and then he went on about sort of what his design philosophies were, about how he created quick time events. To be sort of like a cool action scene that people could interact with even if they didn't have the skills to win, like, a flashy fighting event using, like, a fighting game engine. Which, because, you know, initially Shenmue was just going to straight up have Virtua Fighter's combat engine, and it still has a fighting system very similar to Virtua Fighter, but Again, Yu Suzuki-san created the QuickTime event for this game basically so that people could be interacting with flashy cutscenes and feel responsible for the action going on in some way. Which I think is a fascinating perspective on QuickTime events. In any event, you know, again, this is another fascinating read. Polygon did a great job writing it up. You can find a link over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And with that, I think it's time to move on to Smash and or Trash. And it definitely is an or trash this week because we have two Smashes.
Smash or Smash.
Slaggy, would you like to give us our first Smash?
Yeah, we keep shouting out to Jeremy Parrish these days. He did a article over on his new home at US Gamer called Mighty No. 9, Keeping the Mega Man Legacy Alive. And as you might expect, it just kind of is a look at Inafune-san showed off the first playable pre-alpha build of Mighty No. 9. Just kind of looking at the development of this game and, kind of tying into what Inafune-san was saying about how the first Mega Man was an indie game. And, it's a really good read. If you are interested in Mighty No. 9, you should go over to GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And check it out.
Our second Smash this week is an interview done again by Jeremy Parrish over on US Gamer. Man, we are really on Parrish's nuts this week.
Hey!
This is called The Resurrection of Koji Igarashi. And it's basically an interview that sort of hits all of sort of the main points of why Igarashi left and what he plans on doing now. There's some really great material here. It's a great interview. He talks about a lot of sort of the weird changes that U.S. fans were wondering, such as why Dawn of Sorrow had an anime art style rather than the traditional beautiful character designs that the post-Metroidvania Castlevanias adhered to. So this is a great read. I would definitely recommend that you look this article up over on US Gamer. You can find a link at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And in case you're wondering, he does get asked about Kickstarter in this interview. I know you're wondering about it.
I know you're wondering.
With that having been said, I think it's time to see what we're playing.
Hey, girl, what you playing?
It's Jess.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Alright, I have a couple games I want to talk about here this week. First and foremost, I want to talk about Titanfall, which I have put a ridiculous number of hours into. And I just also wanted to point out, I've been talking about how great this game is. I wanted to see if this was just a frenzy that I had based on hype for being, in the gaming community and hearing so much about this game, or if there was something really cool going on. So I recently threw a party for St. Patrick's Day, and left Titanfall running on the Xbox One throughout the night just to see how people who had never played the game were going to react to it. And the reception was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, even people that wouldn't usually consider themselves gamers.
Yeah, one of my friends, she is long-term otaku in the American sense. That is to say that she's like a huge, huge anime nerd and stuff. She has never touched a first-person shooter in her life. And she fell in love with the game. She loved, like, the giant robots and stuff. And, she didn't necessarily perform very well, but she had a lot of fun. And to me, that's obviously way more important than anything else. So I was really, really surprised and happy to see that this sort of crazy interest in this game that I have is somewhat validated and not just a result of, like, oh, I heard so much about that game that now I'm interested even though it's awful, which, seems like a silly concern. But nonetheless, I was concerned, because this, like, Titanfall, how the hell did I fall into this hole? I also played a good chunk of Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which is a stunning-looking game with, I think, really awesome and incredible level designs. Obviously, I'm progressing through the game rather slowly, as I insist on 100%ing every stage before I go on to the next one. And these Donkey Kong Country games are designed with a lot of little secrets and bits. Again, I'm really happy and impressed. I love the level designs. I love the way the game looks. Overall, an incredible experience, and if you have a Wii U, I highly recommend you pick it up. Last, but most certainly not least, I have been playing the Final Fantasy X HD Collection on Vita. I'm only about 2 hours into Final Fantasy X, but I have to say I'm already enjoying the game a lot more than I had enjoyed the game contemporaneous to its release.
Oh, that's great.
It's somewhat controversial, I feel. I often hear from people when I talk about how I've never been a big fan of Final Fantasy X. I think it's cute for what it is, but I don't think it's all that. I have to say, playing it again this time, now that the console landscape isn't chock full of amazing JRPGs, now that I'm a little thirsty for JRPGs, this is really hitting the spot, and I really am starting to get why people like it so much. Slaggy, how about you? What you been playing?
Well, I've been a little busy, but I still got some gaming time in. One fun thing that I always like to mention is Rock Band 3. So woo-hoo! Nothing new to say there, but we had some fun with Rock Band 3. And then we went to the arcade and we played a little Street Fighter Alpha 3.
Yes, we did, Mama.
And you beat my ass pretty bad.
That's kind of what I do.
But yeah, so, you know, I think even in our busiest moments, it's important for gamers to make time to game. Those are Slaggy's final thoughts.
Ha 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 ha. All right, well, I think that does it for What's Up. So, did we have any social links this week?
Yeah, we've got a couple of pieces of feedback from our last episode about video game movies, and just in general. Chitao16 over on Twitter says, OMG, I forgot about the Double Dragon movie. He also tweeted that...
You're better off.
He also tweeted, I didn't want to bang Freddie Prinze Jr. in 1999. Probably...
Well, more for me.
Probably the only person. Well, because... Clerical Errors, a.k.a. Renee, from the Killer Queens from Outer Space podcast, said, you totally did. Don't deny it. Oh, so this was just a little chain that went on. Chitao16 said, I was more into Matthew Lillard. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. And Clerical Errors replied, ew!
Okay, to be fair, Matthew Lillard in, like, Scream or SLC Punk, either way I'm in.
Matthew Lillard in Scooby-Doo? No.
Ooh, girl. Ew! Anyway, continue with this thread.
That was the end of the thread. But, you know, I realized that when we were talking about Wing Commander, that Scooby-Doo must have been the second pairing of Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze on screen. Freddie Prinze Jr., sorry. And the book...
It's all old Freddie Prinze. He's like, when I was an actor!
Ah! The book pirate over on Twitter, better known as Colin from the Nerd Podcast, says, drinking game idea for GameBuoy.org. Take a drink whenever they quote or sing a song lyric. Ooh, you're going to get a little tipsy tonight, then.
Every night, man. We are bad or good about that.
Yeah. You know, so get a bottle of Kinky and, you know, and go to town. Kinky is actually a drink. I'm not just being
it's delicious, McWhitty. Too. It is delicious. Keep on keeping on, bro.
Yeah, so if you would like to interact with us, we love your feedback.
We love it.
We think it's awesome.
Awesome.
You can give us iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter.
We love Twitter.
You can tumble with us on Tumblr, plus one us on Google Plus. You can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org. And of course, you can always visit us, find all these social links, as well as the complete archive of our episodes at gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
And with that, we'd like to wrap it up with some shoutouts.
Wrap it up. No, but in all seriousness, as ever and always, I want to shout out first to Koopa Club. They are Sista Show. Talk about a lot of the same things that we talk about, and if you like us, you will almost certainly like them. Go check them out over at KoopaClub.com. That's Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. I'd also like to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. That's another one of our Sista Shows. I love what they do, too. I also want to shout out to Neshoba Talks With You About Games. This is, of course, the gaming show done in the style of NPR on Broadway. Neshoba sort of dishes out the news and opinions in a way that I kind of feel like no one else is really doing out there on the internet, and as a result, I am a huge fan. I also, of course, would be awful of me not to shout out to the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. I also want to shout out to the non-gaming podcast.
But very nerdy.
The Starboard Power Coupling podcast. the Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. That's a Star Trek joke, and I love it.
I know, but for a non-Star Trek fan, I'm like, aw.
Ah!
It's a little downer Debbie.
As I was, like, copy-pasting their, like, slogan in the notes, I was even thinking, like, man, if I wasn't, like, a Star Trek person, I'd be like, oh my god, what's, like, why do you guys have such bad self-esteem? Why do you hate you? Anyways, I want to shout out, of course, to Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I personally take ever so many cues. And on a related note, you can catch Rog Roberts. You can catch Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio.
Rog Rogers.
On air with us, Slagkick and I, as well as Delvin from VG Realness over on Reading is Fundamental.
Because reading is what?
Fundamental.
Fundamental. That's right, darling.
Of course, this is a show where basically I am a complete rude bitch to Slagkick for 2 hours talking about the 90-minute weekly broadcasts of RuPaul, Drag Race, and Untucked.
I mean, that's not what the show is, too.
Yeah, no, but I'm way meaner to you on that show. At least on this one, you know what you're talking about.
Just snapped in a Z formation.
See? Are you supposed to do like two snaps and a twist?
Take us to a game bar.
I wanna take it to a game bar!
I'd like to shout out to Game Bar, the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They're basically the gay prairie home companion of video game podcasts, and they're part of the Hunty Bunch. I'd like to also shout out to Nerdgasm Network, the wildest shock jock video game radio show you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, that's vognetwork.com, you can check out Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Horde House, featuring Rob Roberts and Grandpa from the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. Video Game Outsiders is the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. The Nerd Podcast, that's Nerd with a G, features pop culture rants from a gay nerd perspective. And very near and dear to my heart, because it was inspired by the podcast Crossland Panel, is the La Palanca podcast, which is the podcast por y para gay gamers Latinoamericanos en Español. And
as ever and always,
our wonderful theme music was done by Zola Reorchestrated. May they rest in peace.
Indeed. All right. Out there in Internet Radio Land, thank you once again for spending a sunny Sunday afternoon with us. You may recall I had teased that we had a very special, fun episode coming up. That has been delayed by about 2 weeks, but please look forward to it.
I'm very excited about that.
And in the next 2 weeks, you should see us also celebrating a very special landmark event in the history of GameBuoy.org.
Indeed.
Also,
I mean, it's really going to make a splash, I think.
By what I meant, actually, was that you have to repeat me because I said GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Thank you.
But yeah, I really think this event's going to make a big splash in the podcast scene.
Girl, don't be so obvo. Don't be so obvo. In any event, we've given you enough teasers for what the next month is going to look like for us. I hope you stay with us for that. Thank you for your time. Keep gaming, keep thinking, and until next time, Byakuya no concerto.
Count Chocula Concerto?
Pretty much.
That stink face.
And the mics are hot.
Ooh, hot stuff.
Ooh, baby, baby. Baby. Ooh, baby, baby.
Baby, baby.
Baby, baby.
Baby, baby.
Are you talking about my babby?
Oh, baby, baby.
Oh, babby, babby.
Oh, babby, babby. Babby, babby.
Push it real good.
Give them blowjobs for Louboutins.
What you call that?
Head over heels.
I got really mad when Bianca read her and was like, you got those cheeks and those lips, but you didn't do nothing about that nose. What happened? Your money run out? That was on when they were doing
female
and
a lot of the reason she had to get the plastic surgery was of her accident that nearly killed her.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that was not plastic surgery that was done because she's a vain monster or creature or whatever. It was done because
Chad Michaels' surgery.
Exactly. No, because she literally lost her face. She probably didn't have her nose fucked with because her nose was the only part of her face that was okay.
Ooh, kind of fucking, Ivy winners.
So yeah, no, that actually just, that was, I think that might be why I didn't get super upset about female or she-male, is I was too busy being angry about fucking Bianca's comment about fucking detox. Like, fuck you fucking bitch. Anyway. Alright.